This episode of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org.
Hi, this is Marina Sirtis, Deanna Troi from Star Trek The Next Generation. You're listening to Trek FM.
Theo Greyhawk.
Welcome to another cup of Earl Grey, Trek FM's dedicated podcast to the next generation. I'm your severely jet-lagged host, Joe Keegan, and joined with me today are my most amazing, famous podcaster friend, Amy Nelson, and also my new friend, Justin Ozer. How are you both today? Amy?
Yeah, I'm a little sad. Everyone has left my city. They've gone home. They're back to their lives. I'm back to my life. I'm starting work. What is that about? But I'm happy to be here to see your lovely faces again.
I suppose you only work 180 days a year or something, doesn't it? So that's the next holiday is only around the corner.
It's just around the corner. That is true.
It's probably next week. Cool. Justin, how are you?
Yeah, doing great. Well, it was great to finally meet you in person, Joe. That was awesome. And of course, we got to record a podcast in person, which is such a nice rarity that we did for Star Trek Las Vegas. We didn't talk about it as much as last time, but this is the first episode we're kind of recording not in person, where we had gotten all the news about Star Trek Picard with the trailer, and knowing that more people from TNG, Brent Spiner and Jonathan Frakes and Marina Sirtis and Jonathan Del Arco and also Jerry Ryan from Voyager are going to be in Picard. It's so exciting, and TNG is more relevant than ever, right?
Very true.
Yes. It was really cool to see Jonathan Frakes and Jerry Ryan and Jonathan Del Arco on stage. Wish they'd given us some more news. I don't think we learned anything particularly new from the Picard panel, but it was still cool to see them. I love Jerry Ryan. Mm-hmm. I think she ages backwards.
Well, and one thing that I think is just a delight is seeing everyone. A lot of people are doing a TNG rewatch in, you know, preparation for the new Picard. And so people are tweeting about the next generation, even, you know, going back to season one and season two, which I find just delightful. And so I'm so happy to see the newfound energy in the next gen.
And that just means we're going to have more listeners, I would imagine.
I would hope so.
I would imagine.
And if this is your first time listening to Earl Grey, welcome.
How are we going to handle being famous podcasters? We'll have to have like an entourage and security with us. Well, that could be interesting.
Well, you will. You're the most famous of us, Joe, with all of your cosplays that got so much attention.
Don't tell Amy, but I've been saying this for a long time now. Oh, Amy, you're there. Oh, okay.
Stop, you guys.
Okay, so we are having an iTunes giveaway. If you leave an iTunes written review and star rating between now and August 31st, then you'll be entered into the draw to win a pack of TNG collector's cards, which have been kindly donated by Trek Fan LV, who is Chris Tribuzio, who's one of our associate producers.
That's right.
Yes. Yeah. I got a pack of these also, and I sorted them out numerically, which took me a couple of hours, and it's just really fun.
Yeah, and Joe, you sent me a message if I had certain cards, and I was like, I didn't open it. It's factory sealed.
Why?
It's like a collectible like that, and I'm not opening it, at least yet. Maybe some years from now, but you couldn't help yourself. You had to open it.
I do. I'm not one of those people that have things in kind of still in the shrink wrap or still in the kind of factory sealed packaging. If I buy something, I have to open it usually before I get home.
Okay.
I'm that impatient. Like even there's a huge group of people that collect this, the Star Trek starships, mm-hmm. and they've labeled all their boxes. So if they like move house, they've got the box that the starship came in. I don't do that. I take them out of the box and put the box in the bin.
Yeah. Well, so now that you've seen the cards, what do you think of them?
I think they're really cool.
Yeah.
I like them. I'm not sure when they were produced. It feels like they were maybe produced back when TNG was on.
Yeah,
originally.
I think if I remember right, 1992.
Oh, okay. So yeah, no, they feel of the time. Like they don't feel like a current production. So if anybody has these cards, I am missing 103, 107, 110, 111, 102H, and 103H. And the H stands for hologram cards. So please send me a message, tell me you got them, and arrange to send them to me. So thank you.
I'll check my set because I like opening things as well. So I will check for you.
Please do. So we've got some Babel Conference feedback for episode 284, which was the Deleted Scenes Part 2. And in that one, we were talking about one episode only because it took so long.
Evolution, 11 scenes from Evolution.
That's right. It was good fun. That was my first Deleted Scenes episode that I was on. So Amy, take it away.
All right, well, Kimberly Lawler writes, apparently TrekCore crashed over the weekend, so they're still trying to migrate servers, and the links don't work yet, at least for me. Looking forward to watching the clips, but the pod episode was good. Well, Kimberly, that's pretty... I don't know if they crashed because of our podcast. I don't know.
I don't think it was because... Yeah, so this is from a couple of weeks ago. So actually what happened was the Picard trailer came out at San Diego Comic-Con, and TrekCore had some stories and things about it, and apparently their site crashed because they're getting too much traffic. So it also crashed that, and it took them a while, but as of this recording on August 10th, it is back up, and I sent Kimberly a message in the Babel conference that it's back up, and she got to watch it. So that was worth it. And listeners,
so it wasn't because of us. Darn it.
No, it wasn't because we were sending tons of traffic to watch Deleted Scenes. Probably not. No, it happened a couple days before. It happened either a few, I think it was like a few days before the episode.
Yeah, it had to have been because the news was on Saturday and our episode dropped on Tuesday.
And it came out on Tuesday. That's right.
Yeah, because I came on TrekCore while I was trying to research for the recording, so...
Yeah, I think they have everything back up now, but listeners, if you listened to that and you wanted to see the scenes and you couldn't because TrekCore wasn't available, it's available now. The link's in the show notes. If for some reason you can't find that, you know, look for the post in the Babel conference for Earl Grey 284 or reach out to us and we can send you the links to watch those. Definitely well worth watching. All right, so Paul Wright Jr. just said, Bob Kelso. And that had to do with Ken Jenkins, who played Stubbs in Evolution. I think, Amy, you're trying to remember who you played on Scrubs, and Paul Wright Jr. gave you the answer.
Yes! Kelso! I totally forgot, so thank you, Paul.
We even had, I think, talked about that. You remember way back when we were talking with Richard about different characters who got notoriety on other
That's
shows.
That's right, yeah.
Like that. Yeah. Yeah, but that was, I don't know, over a year ago.
Yeah.
So... Thank you, Paul, for setting us straight on that.
I never watched Scrubs when it was on. I think I've maybe seen a handful of episodes.
It's pretty cute.
I'll maybe have to go back and watch it.
I haven't seen them all, just a few on reruns. Okay. But
cool. So we also have some Babel Conference feedback for episode 285, which we did on the character of Kern. This person, is it Brunei Yakuza? No. How'd you say her name?
That's, yes.
Don't send me any messages, Brandy. This is all Joe.
Brandy, Jacola, they make fun on live.
And that's why I did it. I was
how to pronounce
like,
it, but
yeah.
I know.
Out of love.
Even though I've never met her before or interacted with her in any way.
Oh, really? That's a shame.
She looks super cool.
Really nice.
She's lovely.
So Brandy Jacola says, I love Kern. I got to meet Tony Todd at FanX Spring this year. He was in a word.
Oh, wait. Was that FanX?
Yeah, FanX.
The convention that I'll be presenting at?
Yes, that with Brandy. Amy will famously be at a panel for.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
Excellent. So since I'm hosting, can I maybe finish my comment, Amy? Thank
Please.
You.
Please.
Huh. So I'll start again. Brandy Jacola says, I love Kern. I got to meet Tony Todd at FanX Spring this year. He was, in a word, amazing. We shared stories about cats we had loved and lost, and he gave me a hug. One of my best Trek interactions of all time. Brandy, you like cats. I do not like cats. I like dogs. And I do not like Tony Todd either.
I'm sad,
because he's terrifying. That is all.
I'm sad because cats and Tony Todd are two of my favorite things too.
Okay, that's fine. Each to their own. There was something, the videos that people have been posting and the pictures of being reunited with their dogs after STLV? Like the whole host
yes.
of them. There was a video I saw yesterday of somebody being reunited with their cat after an event, and the cat walks up to them and just walks right past. So that's what cats are like.
Isn't that the best? Oh, a reunion. It warms my heart. I love cats.
Diabolical creatures.
Not all cats are like that.
Yeah.
Not all cats are like that. I have cats that love me very much.
Sure.
I swear.
That's what they make you think while they're plotting your demise.
Well, even if it's an act, it's very convincing.
It is.
Okay, so Andrea Valentova says, Hey, Earl Grey crew, I am indeed a listener from the Czech Republic. Thank you for letting us know. That was from a previous episode where we found out we were charting in the Czech Republic for Apple Podcasts for a time. And Andrea is letting us know that she's listening from the Czech Republic. So hello, and thank you for letting us know that real people from the Czech Republic listen to Earl
Grey. Or, as they say, ahoy.
Right.
I remember that. I can't remember any of the Hungarian, but I remember Ahoy, Vishem, Nishim, Polosko, Chum, Vicheska, Republice, Diki, Zapozlich.
Yeah, you mean the Czech Republic.
I know, but Hungary. I can't remember the Hungarian. I remember the Czech, but...
Oh, but you can remember the Czech.
Yeah, it's like in my brain now, and it will never go away. Kimberly Lawler says, One thing that struck me was the discussion about the differences between Picard and Sisko on how they would have handled Kern wanting to commit suicide. Picard's cultural relativism in this regard doesn't sit well with me. I agree more with Riker and Sisko, but I suppose I can understand the argument that it wasn't the Starfleet officer's call to make. However, not getting Kern's consent to wipe his memory was extremely unsettling. Hashtag still listening. My favourite Trek species is the Vulcans. Their logic and emotional self-control is very appealing to me, and I have really liked most of the Vulcan characters on the shows, especially Tuvok and T'Pol, and Sarek, and of course Spock. Although I haven't watched Discovery, I understand that shows them in a somewhat different light. Yeah, thanks for the comment, Kimberly. The first part of your comment about how Picard and Sisko would have handled it differently, I think that's just a testament to the fact that they were incredibly different leaders.
Also in different situations, one on a Federation ship, the other on a Bajoran space station. That could have had something to do with it.
Yeah. I agree with you, Kimberly, about how that made me feel really uncomfortable when Kern's mind and memory got wiped. It was a violation on his person with no consent whatsoever. I'm not sure if Discovery shows the Vulcans in a different light necessarily, apart from the whole Vulcan hello. They fire first and then ask questions.
I think that you see certain aspects of Spock and Sarek's character explored that you don't maybe see as much elsewhere, but I think it's still recognizable that they're Vulcans dealing with the kinds of things they usually deal with, emotional self-control and all of that.
I think the show that maybe showed Vulcans in a different light the most was Enterprise. They just seemed like really difficult and
the
stubborn.
First couple seasons, yeah.
So thanks, Kimberly. We also have Babel Conference feedback for episode 286.
I know, this is a marathon of feedback.
Yes, which was our hilarious STLV 2019 show. So, Amy.
Alrighty, well, we have Jim Stoffel, who mentions all the panels that he went to, and that he says that they were awesome. He went to Terry Farrell and Ethan Peck, Nichelle Nichols, Anson Mount, Jason Isaacs, Chase Masterson. They all were wonderful. Well, thank you, Jim, for letting us know that you enjoyed those panels. I went to most of them as you, and again, just thought they were awesome as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I actually only went to a few of those. I think same for you, Joe, right?
I think I saw maybe 4 panels over the entire week. Just because it was a different STLV for me, to a different dynamic. But the ones that I did see were pretty cool. I'm glad I saw them. Especially the teaching and Trek ones. They were pretty useful for my job.
Okay, so we have Stefan Ringlein who says, "Great episode, guys. Thanks for the detailed reports and impressions every time. It's a highlight every year and pushes me one step closer to going there myself. I'm also looking forward to the Picard show, and also I'm very excited about Lower Decks. About the Section 31 and the Pike show, I'm patiently waiting on what they'll announce before getting emotionally involved. Hashtag still listening. I was just rolling on the floor laughing about your Scottish food review bit. It was hilarious. Amy, I totally feel the same way about Jaffa cakes. We also have those here in Germany, but with a different name. No offense, Joe." So thanks for your comments, Stefan. Glad that you enjoyed the episode. And let's talk about that Scottish food review. I think we got a lot of positive feedback, a lot of people that thought it was really funny. I think I found it hard to contain myself and not laugh the whole time.
I think the reason people enjoyed it was because it was obvious that we were having fun doing it.
I mean, it was a risk because it was just audio. You know, it's like, gosh, are we going to have some video to see the reactions? But I think it came through. I mean, it sounds like it came through. So it was good.
Yeah, you could hear the reactions. You could hear your hatred of Jaffa Cakes.
I know, but my face. Oh, my gosh.
That was
STLV, I've never met anybody that hasn't liked the Jaffa Cake.
Really?
You're the first. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Well, now you know Stefan and I don't like him.
That's fine. We can still be friends.
Okay.
So, Kimberly Lawler says, "Nice to hear from you all from the convention. You make it sound like a lot of fun. Maybe I can talk my husband into going next year. It would be so nice to meet people in person. And maybe Patrick Stewart will actually show up next summer after Picard has come out. And they can do a TNG panel too. So our favourite show gets more love like it should. Amy Nelson, I'm with you in being so impressed by Kate Mulgrew. I'm doing a Voyager rewatch right now and Janeway has definitely become my second favourite captain after Picard." So thanks for your comment, Kimberly. Yes, I'm not sure if Patrick Stewart will do another convention after last year.
I don't know. I think if season one of Picard has come out and he's not busy shooting next summer,
I think
he should be there.
Yeah, I think it'll all depend on his schedule. But Kimberly, I'm already taking names. You are on my list to attend STLV 2020. So I will see you next year. I've already had a couple other comments, and I definitely am taking names.
And you took Stefan's name also because he said he's being pushed closer to going to STLV, so he's on your list too.
Oh, yes. I got him as well.
There's absolutely no reason why people shouldn't come to STLV.
It does cost money, so...
Well, there's a couple reasons.
No.
Money, distance, taking time off. I mean, there are things that get in... They can get annoyed.
I know, real life. Minor, what is up with that?
Minor details. Just get it sorted. So I think if we're mentioning people that have never been to STLV before, we have to mention people for whom STLV was a first. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to say her name, Rhea Papagiorgio.
Yes.
Who it was so lovely to meet for the first time. And I think she had a really special time at the convention. Just how we got to hang out with her. We went out for a dinner a couple of times. And it was just really, really nice. And she looks amazing.
She was out there fighting Klingons on the floor of the convention.
Yeah. Yes.
I saw her Bat'leth work. It was pretty spectacular. So yeah, I can count Rhea Papagiorgio as one of my friends now. So that's cool.
Well, Christopher Baca writes, says, "Thanks to some awesome fans posting video, I got to see parts of the motion picture panel. It's so cool to get the inside story on how the effects were done. That panel should have been recorded for the future 4K release. The V'ger transfiguration effect and the Enterprise reveal with the moray effect is still one of my favorite shots in any Trek film. It's amazing what was done with the animation, paintings on glass, etc." Well, Christopher, I was there for that panel as well, and it was just beautifully done and explained, and it was very interesting. Mm-hmm.
That was actually a highlight. I loved seeing that panel and hearing how things were done back in, you know, the late 70s.
Yeah, with how they did the effect for the cloud mm-hmm. and everything. I mean, it was really good. And I am one who likes the motion picture, so I thought it was interesting.
Yeah. I do as well. And I just like the fact that there was like no CGI. It was all just photographic effects.
Yeah, they had to be very creative.
So let's jump into this episode, where this is part three of our Science in the Next Generation. The first episode that I have selected to highlight the science in is The Chase. And I've chosen that episode because of the kind of themes of the origins of life.
The Chase, listeners, if you remember, where Picard tries to finish his old archaeology teacher's monumental last mission, solving a puzzle that leads humans, Romulans, Klingons, and Cardassians to the secret of life in this galaxy, revealing the origin of humanoid life. And when we went through the Picard exhibit, they had the where his teacher brought him, what was the
Curlin Neskos, is that
Curlin,
it?
Yeah. That piece was on display, and it just, so very, very awesome set piece to have.
I think this might be one of my favorite TNG episodes, because there's something kind of Indiana Jones like adventure about it, and it's nothing to do with archaeology. It just seems like it's this big race to find something, which I really enjoy. Anyways, the origins of life. So, Amy, Justin, how old is the universe?
It's 13 point something billion years old?
Point something isn't a number.
Okay, 13.7 or 8. I don't remember the exact.
Oh, okay, yeah. So,
sorry, I watch a lot of videos that are about cosmology, so that's been banged in my head
a bit. So somewhere between 13.7 and 13.8 billion years old. Okay, when was the Earth created?
About four.
Please don't say 6,000 years ago. So that would be incorrect.
4.5 billion? It's 4.6, something like that.
Stop Googling,
I'm not.
Justin.
I just, again, it's been like banged into my head because I've watched all these videos about the universe.
Okay.
Sorry, right, but I should give Amy a chance.
Yes, please.
No, you're doing just fine, Justin. I'm riding on your coattails, what he said.
So, Amy, this is your question now, yeah? So the universe is 13.7 billion years old. The Earth is 4.5 billion years old. When, roughly, did the first life appear?
I don't know.
I think I know. Was it 3.8 billion, something like that?
Okay, yeah. So in the kind of in the region of like 4 billion
About
years
4 billion.
Ago.
Yeah.
So roughly 500 million years after the Earth was created, and just after the first water appeared on the planet. So the first life would have been like single-celled microorganisms that would have been found in the material that was ejected from hydrothermal vents at the bottom of the oceans or the newly formed oceans. So things that perhaps would have been able to survive really high temperatures and really high pressures, but were nonetheless single-celled organisms. Now, there's another question which kind of springs to mind. Where did this life come from? Now, there's two schools of thought on it. So there's two schools of thought on it. Either the organic compounds that came together to form the first amino acids, then produce the first proteins, they kind of naturally formed and came together on this newly formed Earth. Or the material was introduced from outside the Earth, i.e. from meteor impacts. And we don't know where it came from. There are just two theories, and I'm not sure if either one will ever be provable.
Until we get a time machine to go back and find out for sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's possible.
It's probably unlikely.
No, even though we time travel all the time.
We do.
In that, like, our satellites go... Time for our satellites in orbit... it goes faster than time for us on the surface because of the fact that we're deeper in the gravitational well.
Mm-hmm. And even when you don't move, you're really traveling through time anyway, right?
And that time passes
and goes forward. You're
time's
moving
arrow, yeah, goes forward always. Or is there such a thing of time, or is it just the relative change in position of the material in the universe? There's no such thing as time.
A very deep question.
Amy, are you dumbfounded by this new knowledge that you have?
Yes, I am.
Can you count as high as 13.7 billion?
No, I cannot.
Of course you can. It would just take time.
You would be long dead.
Yes.
I think you maybe get to a couple of million before you're dead.
I don't think so, especially if you count really fast.
But the fact of saying the words takes time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, when you got up to like 1,376,558. 1,300,000.
See, you would just you would just use a shorthand. It would be like 1,300,000. 1,234,579. Like that. And you know that what came before it is... Anyway, that's a totally separate question.
But the okay, so you're going to cheat Justin is what you're saying. That's fine.
I'm just going to be more efficient, you mean.
Oh, okay. That's fine.
I wanted to make sure to mention that we don't know whether the origin of life just happened, you know, right on Earth or came from somewhere else. But there was an episode of Earl Grey that we previously did that where Richard and I had on Mike Wong and Elise Kutz from Strange New World, Science and Star Trek podcast. And they talked all about this idea of panspermia, life coming from somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And I think the conclusion they came to is that what you see in the chase is very, very unlikely, that a civilization would be able to seed something and still have these things that would show as markers like billions of years later. So, but anyway, if listeners want to go back, that was pretty interesting where we had talked about that.
There's that question that people always ask me because I'm a science teacher. Do you think life exists? And there's a number of ways you can interpret that. Do you think, like talking about extraterrestrial life, do you think it exists anywhere in the universe? Do you think there's an intelligent civilization that has visited us? Or do you just think there's intelligent life elsewhere in the universe? So I like to think, answer the question, is there life elsewhere in the universe? And I think the obvious answer is yes, there has to be.
There has to be, but is it so far away that we might not be able to communicate?
Yeah, and that's fine, but if the question is, does it exist, then yes. Given the Milky Way galaxy in which we live contains somewhere in the region of 450 billion stars, and if even a fraction of them have even one or two planets, then you're talking about the Milky Way galaxy having trillions of planets. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be a small fraction of them that are within the habitable zone around their stars. And so then the likelihood increases of life evolving on them if there's kind of liquid water, if the right ingredients for life exist. And then the Milky Way is just one kind of average-sized galaxy. And there are hundreds and hundreds of billions of galaxies in the universe.
And that's just in the observable universe. There's lots of the universe we can't even see because it's traveling so quickly away from us that we can't even see the light from it. So there's got to be something out there. We just don't know how far away.
Something like the universe's, with it being 13.7 billion years old, it's actually like something like 150 billion light years across.
I think if I remember right, the observable universe is something like 90 billion light years across, because there are things where the light left like 13 billion years ago, but in that time, the universe has expanded enough that it's further away. The universe is mind-bogglingly big. It's pretty incredible. I just wanted to mention before we go on, so that Earl Grey episode about the chase in panspermia was number 237.
So did you happen to go to that teaching trek where it's Mohammed Noor spoke? He wrote a book called Live Long and Evolve, What Star Trek Can Teach Us About Evolution, Genetics, and Life on Other Worlds. Did you see that panel?
I did not.
So I was able to catch the first 15 minutes because then I had to go. I think William Shatner was coming on. They double book the panels and it's very frustrating. But I did get to see the first. And why I think this episode, The Chase, actually could, I mean, we know that you said that it's not, but Professor Noor was saying that, and again, I really do apologize. Don't send me hate mail. I know I don't know this, but the, like how we're saying that humans didn't come from like the apes, like that's completely different, but that there is evolution within the same family. But so that like humans, Romulans, Klingons could have evolved from each other. And so that I like that idea.
From each other, like there was some humanoid that was seeded instead of the single cell life?
Yes. Hmm. And so his Professor Knorr, you know, talked about like some myths, you know, it's like myths, we did not, you know, come from apes. Like that's a completely different strand. I'm sorry I'm not using the right terminology, but I'm going to get his book and read more on it because I find it very interesting. But I can see that how those life forms were able to evolve.
Yeah, I think it's more plausible if you say that humanoids are being seeded. The Chase does say something different, that billions of years ago it seeded like the first life. But if you brought it up to like humanoid life, like, I don't know,
right,
a million years ago or something, maybe that might be more plausible.
And for it to, like on all these planets, for it to evolve to be pretty similar, like humanoid, two arms, two legs, body, head, eyes in the same place, is pretty unfathomable. That question about whether life exists, either yes, it does, because like enough time has elapsed and there's enough planets out there, or no, it doesn't, because we are that race.
Oh.
That seeds life elsewhere in the universe at some point.
The other answer is it did, but they all destroyed themselves, you know. But that's also kind of unlikely that you'd have lots of civilizations all doing the same thing and destroying themselves, I think. But
mind blown. We're going to move on to suspicions. Amy.
All right. So in suspicions, Dr. Crusher violates Starfleet regulations and medical ethics when she investigates the death of a Ferengi scientist. So why are we talking about suspicions?
The byline I've given on this is super shields. In this, Dr. Crusher, kind of, does she invent the metaphysic shields?
I think, well, she doesn't invent it, but it's this idea from this Ferengi scientist, Dr. Rega, and she brings together other scientists to examine the idea. But she's kind of the catalyst for helping the research along to examine it and eventually make it work, yeah. It would be cool if she invented it, but...
Unlikely that she would have done, given our kind of medical background. We're talking about this not from the perspective of medical ethics, but because of shields. Now, we don't have anything on present-day Earth that resembles anything like the shields that we see in Star Trek. No force fields, no nothing cool that can protect us from radiation or gunshots or whatever like that.
The only thing we really have is physical shielding, but we don't have like energy
shields.
Yeah,
like armor, yeah. The US military have a couple of prototypes, things which behave kind of not unlike shields. So there's one thing called active protection systems, which is the most unlike a shield. So basically, on a tank, you would have this APS system, and it would be constantly monitoring the surroundings around the tank, using like sensors and cameras, looking for incoming projectiles. And then very quickly, if it identified a projectile incoming, it would shoot it, either with another projectile or a gun or a laser, blow up before it got to the tank.
So it's mostly just having better like active sensors to see something coming.
Exactly.
Interesting.
So that's not very like shields at all. However, the other one is to use a laser to produce a plasma that produces a shockwave, which absorbs the shockwave from an explosion. So think about a tank again. A tank hits an IED, like an improvised explosive device, creates this shockwave. A laser detects the shockwave from the explosion. The way I understand it, it fires two lasers to a focal point, and it produces, turns the air at that location into a plasma. And the plasma that's created absorbs the shockwave from the explosion, protecting the tank from the shockwave. Now, it's like a concussive shockwave, so it would protect the inhabitants. Now, that way, if you're in an explosion, the thing that is most likely to kill you is the concussive shockwave. It's like being in a really high-speed collision. Like, it hits your body, and then your internal organs kind of basically impact. Yeah. Your ribs, your brain impacts the front of your skull. So that's kind of cool.
That's cool. It's like a shield on demand.
Yeah.
Yeah. Doesn't protect. It's not like a bubble effect. So it just protects like that area where the explosion's coming from,
which is cool.
Wow, I'd never heard of that.
Wow. Hmm. So we are on our way to Shields.
Getting there slowly but surely. But that's the thing they say about wars. Wars are kind of good for technology and technological advancement, which is a terrible thing to have to say as a species, but...
Yeah, but it can be the impetus to spend money on technological advancement, yeah.
Yes.
The metaphasic shield is like a special kind of... I was looking it up, like a subspace shield or something, right?
Yeah, it's just like supercharged shields.
Like, so they can get really close to a star.
Yeah, it just blankets more of the EM spectrum, I suppose.
It's pretty interesting. Yeah. Well, and you do see... So you see it in Suspicions, and... It actually gets used in Descent Part 2 against the Borg.
That's right.
Yeah.
Did they not fly into a star and then use a flare to destroy the Borg ship or something?
Yes.
You might be right. It's funny that you say that because we have something coming up where we'll be talking about Borg episodes, and I was just watching Descent Part 1 today and I was going to watch Descent Part 2 later, so I don't remember.
Yeah, Crusher does.
Because they do that. I'm sure they do that three times in Star Trek. And is it Redemption?
Mm-hmm.
Redemption Part 2, when Kern does that with the Klingon ship, yeah.
And then I'm sure they do it in an episode of Deep Space Nine.
Deep Space Nine with some Jem'Hadar or something,
yeah,
right?
That's right. It must be easy if they do it so much.
Yeah, it's like, oh yeah, we'll just get really close to a star and then do something.
Fire your tractor beam at the surface.
Or go to warp or whatever, yeah, and like, zoop.
Cause a coronal mass ejection or a solar flare and destroy the ships that are behind you. Easy.
Future technology is amazing. Anything's possible, right?
No, that's what sci-fi is all about.
Yeah.
Next episode is Second Chances, which I've named Dolly the Riker. Amy?
All right. So in Second Chances, the Enterprise finds a second Will Riker on a planet that he helped evacuate 8 years ago. This is such a good episode. I love it.
And then, of course, we see Thomas Riker later in Deep Space Nine, where he steals a Defiant and joins the Maquis.
And has fake sideburns.
Does he?
Or a fake beard or whatever.
Oh, that's right. He rips
them
off, doesn't he?
Yes.
Interesting. So, this one's all about cloning. And we've been doing cloning for years. It's actually really easy to clone something.
Some things.
Oh, yeah. Like plants.
It's harder to clone others.
So, yeah. If I go out to... I've got a lavender bush in the garden. And if I go out and take a cutting of it and plant that cutting and grow another lavender bush, they are genetically identical. So they're clones of each other. They're not identical, but they're genetically identical, therefore they are clones. You've heard of Dolly the Sheep? Have you heard of Dolly the Sheep? Yep.
Yeah. Which, that was in, what, the mid-90s or something?
That's right. I think within the last maybe 5 years, Dolly died. The clone.
Oh, really?
Yes,
passed
I
away,
remember
yeah.
hearing that, yeah.
Haven't they, I could be wrong about this, but I thought they'd found that some animals that they cloned actually died sooner than would have been expected.
Is that
right?
Maybe a copy of a copy?
Yeah.
Then you get dwindling detail as you the more you copy something, possibly.
It's that thing they talked about in, was it Up the Long Ladder, the replicative fading?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. That was Deep Space Nine, wasn't it? No.
TNG.
Season no, there, one,
season two.
Yeah.
There was a Deep Space Nine episode where they did the same thing and they found genetic material and they cloned it. And it was a man.
They cloned... Oh, I'm trying to... Oh, yeah. I know what you mean. The one... I think it's called A Man Alone, where a guy clones himself and murders somebody else. Yeah?
I think
it was
so,
an
yeah.
early DS9 episode.
Like season
yeah,
one
right
or something,
that.
Yeah. Cool.
Season one, yeah.
Barbara Streisand... You know Barbara Streisand, yeah?
Yeah.
Is she a clone?
No, she's not a clone. She may be. I think anybody in Hollywood that's over the age of like 90, which Barbara Streisand isn't, could likely be clones of themselves.
What is this you're talking about?
Barbara Streisand has cloned her dogs.
Really?
Yes.
What? Well,
so the internet told me.
Where did you get this? I mean, it could be true, but...
I believe it is true. She has clones of her dogs. They're hugely expensive. And I think she maybe has two or three clones of the same dog. To be honest,
Okay.
I would clone Jadzia if I could. My dog, the Deep Space Nine character. I would have just clone her and clone her and clone her.
Yeah, it's still expensive, but it's amazing. There are certain animals that you can clone, but I don't think we've gotten to the point where you could clone a person, right? Or that anyone would want. I don't know. I haven't been following the cloning news.
Wow, it's reported in the New York Times.
I saw that there's an interview with her about why I cloned my dog.
Yeah.
See? You guys didn't believe me.
I didn't know that. I was like, really? Okay.
Like, have you been reading National Enquirer dogs? Again? Yeah, because everything never. In there is true. Yeah, so humans, I don't see why not. Why can't we clone a human and not a dog?
I mean, I think if that had actually happened, I would have heard about it.
Of course, but there's a difference between the ability to do something and the medical ethics around not doing it. I think we probably can clone a human, but we never would because there are rules in place on geneticists not doing this kind of thing. You heard the story recently of the Chinese geneticist scientist who edited the genes of a fetus, or two fetuses, to make them resistant to the HIV virus. And the report was that they were born successfully and they're now babies. And that was within the last year.
Hmm.
And there was a huge discussion on the medical ethics that he broke all international laws by gene editing.
Really?
An actual living embryo.
Yeah, I think this is something interesting. Like, it got a lot of attention, I think, in the 90s with Dolly the Sheep and maybe with a few other things. But there have been things that have been going on that, honestly, I hadn't paid too much attention to. I was actually reading up on it, and I guess last year in 2018, there was the first successful cloning of primates. So that's getting closer to humans. So I don't know, like, what that means. But, I mean, of course, in another sense, we've been doing genetic manipulation through selective breeding of plants and animals for many hundreds or thousands of years. Mm-hmm. So it's already going on. This is just much more sophisticated and different way that's making us ask these questions, whether it's ethical and what that means to clone and all of that. So if you could, Joe, would you clone yourself?
I would clone myself and like send myself to work. Like, go teach. I'm having a duvet day.
I'm very disturbed. So Joe Keegan, the slave that goes to do your work, even if he doesn't want to.
Do you know? I wouldn't have just one slave. I would like have multiple.
Oh no, Joe.
I think
like Harry Mudd.
Would the good part of me come to the fore?
It just leads to some weird questions.
A clone or an identical clone of me, like so a clone that could actually sit here where I'm sitting and take over podcasting. Yes, personality.
Like, has all your memories and everything, let's say.
Like my ability to be a famous podcaster and a famous costume designer. All these things that make me a truly prime example of the human species and an amazing person.
Mm.
But then you're what's left over. Wouldn't that be like the TOS where Kirk was split?
No.
And the good and the bad Kirk? We wouldn't want the bad Joe.
No, he's not splitting in half. He's just making an exact copy. That's a little different.
But you just said that to have the qualities that would make me a famous podcaster, like you would only take the positive qualities, which means what would be left?
No, I would be an exact copy of me just now. Okay, so we'd have this agreement because I would like to clone myself. So my clone... would be okay with this. Yeah.
Oh, because you have permission.
Yeah, but a good thing to talk about in relation to second chances is Thomas Riker and Will Riker were the same up until that moment. But then in the last 8 years, they've had all of these different experiences. So even if you clone yourself right now with all of your experiences, all of your memories, immediately you would begin to diverge in some way because there would be somewhat different experiences, right?
Yes. But not all that different, though, I don't think.
But then he would have different experiences and maybe would come to regret the fact that you cloned him.
Or maybe resent that you're using him in that way.
Ooh, here's a question. Which one of you would be the original?
Me.
But if it's exact.
But Thomas Riker thinks he's the original too, right?
Exactly.
It's not.
But
in a sense, he is.
Exactly.
They're both the original.
So the original is me. The clone, who also thinks he's me.
Who also would say me. I'm the original.
Oh, that's one of those things where, like, who do you shoot?
Yes, I was thinking the same thing.
Like in Star Trek 6.
The real person or the changeling.
Yeah.
Maybe, Joe, you would want to clone yourself, but I definitely wouldn't. it's enough trying to deal with myself as I am. Okay. I don't want to.
So, yeah. Joe, I see where you're going, but I think unless he was like a Borg, because if you would send him off to, listen, if you would send him off to be teaching, you wouldn't be there. So you wouldn't be present. You wouldn't be having the interaction with your students that I know that you love. And if you were, right? So you'd have to be connected like the hive mind, because then otherwise, what would be the point of having you split off and do something different? Because then you couldn't be present here and now, because half of you would be somewhere else.
What would be the point?
Exactly. What would be the point? The paycheck
goes into my bank account.
No, it would go into his bank account.
No, I think Joe is doing this thinking that this clone doesn't really have the same rights he does.
Oh, so now we're getting to Measure of a Man. We're just going to clone a whole bunch of Joes and send them out to do the dangerous work. And
mine dilithium. And no.
Yeah. Sure. No, we'd have a rota. Like, 1 week I'd go to work, the next week he'd go to work.
But you wouldn't have those memories. So what the clone Joe would say, you would be like, I didn't teach you this.
Wait. You'd install a port in the back of your head and his head to like sync up all the memories and experiences at the end of the day.
Sure.
Wow, we're getting really weird now.
Yeah.
I would just jam a USB flash drive in the back of my head and hope that it worked. Why the hell not?
Because all your students, Mr. Keegan, you taught us that last week. No, I didn't.
I'm like, no, I wasn't even here. I was home watching Star Trek.
That was my twin. But I mean, we do have people that are essentially genetically identical twins, but they have different experiences, even if there are certain similarities. They're their own person. What makes a clone different is that you're deciding not at like that moment, you know, where let's say a twin is created and lives out a separate life, but you're deciding in a later moment in life to create this person because you want to, you know. But I mean, in the same way, parents create children because they want to, right? So what makes it maybe weird and different is that you're thinking about this in terms of this wouldn't start as someone who's a baby, but it would start as Joe at your age now, and they would have skipped all of those experiences.
Interesting.
Oh, yeah. It would start like the way I'm talking, my clone would come in and be like my age and look exactly like me just now. But if I were to, like using our technology just now, if I made a clone of myself, then I would have to be born and grow up.
Let's bring in another episode, though, which is Kales, where this clone is created and thinks that he has all of those memories and experiences, but was just created like during that episode, and in a certain way feels like he hasn't really lived any of that experience, and what will he do and all of that, right?
That's a good question. Is if a memory can be implanted, is it still part of their experience?
I'd say not really, because they weren't there for it. They just remember it as if it happened, but if they knew that, they would know that they weren't really there, right?
But all the things that make up a memory have just been transferred. So the way that, like the smells, the sounds, all the different sensations that you experience.
Right. You would think that, but if you were told that you weren't actually there, like what happens in the episode with Kales, then you would realize that wasn't really me. That didn't really happen, but I do remember it. That would probably be a weird sensation.
Right. And it got me thinking about what we may or may not see in the Picard. Like, you know, everything of Data was transferred.
we're going to see a resurrected Shinzon. No.
No, everything from Data was transferred into B4. Yeah. You know, and I was just thinking that. And it also got me to thinking about the one with the old crazy man.
Which one?
Season and Data, and he transfers.
Oh,
to know him is to love him.
Schizoid man, grandpa.
Schizoid man, yeah. Where he was thinking, I'm gonna, you know, transfer all my memories and knowledge, but is that essence able to transfer over? You know, it's an interesting idea, and
it's a good thing we have these Star Trek episodes, because if it is possible to clone, and you were considering it, Joe, maybe this would give you some pause, maybe.
maybe I have to go watch Star Trek and kind of
prime yourself. Like the video of compiled clips, like, here's what to watch to decide if you would like to clone yourself. Here's the ethical yes. considerations Star Trek tells
Make
us.
Make that happen.
Like when you go in, there's like a cloning booth, and you go in wow. like into like the supermarket. There's a cloneyourself.com.
I would be very greatly disturbed if you could just go into a store and just like, whoop, there's a clone. Because that's a huge responsibility. That's a real person you've created, you know.
Oh, but no, just like it scans you. And do you guys have like passport photo booths?
I mean, we have photo booths, yeah.
Well, all you need is like a transporter.
I was going to say.
Like second chances. You just step in, they transport, split your signals, and there's two of you, just like Riker.
Yeah, there should actually be more clones running around if it's possible. Or did they say in second chances it was just because of this like freak accident?
It was something to do with the atmosphere of the planet.
But you would think if they wanted to, they could be like, well, let's recreate that. I mean, because they're really smart engineers. They could probably recreate it and clone people if they wanted to, right? I mean, the other thing is, what if you scanned someone's pattern as if you were going to transport them, but you didn't dematerialize them, but just like rematerialize the pattern somewhere else? You could create a clone, maybe. But that gets into how transporters work, which is kind of...
We're talking about it like these things are actually possible. Oh, yeah, just reflect the transporter beam. Easy. Just put a mirror up.
Yeah, easy. No. But at the same time, we are talking about something cloning, mm-hmm. which has happened with plants and animals yeah. up to primates, right? So eventually, someone may be able to do that with people. And I think Star Trek helps us to think about the ethical mm-hmm. considerations and what to think about. Because like in a certain way, Star Trek is like this really long thought experiment about mm-hmm. the future. And people have written about and acted and directed and thought about these things for decades. And I think it can actually help us to prepare for what we would do then. And I would hope if you have the resources to create your own clone, Joe, that you think about what it's been like in Star Trek and whether it would be worth it.
I really want to insert like some kind of evil laugh.
Joe's plan yes. to take over the world with clones. You just clone like billions of yourself and take over the yeah. world, right?
Like 7.5 billion.
Wow. Yeah, instead of like population 9 billion, all Borg, it'll be like population 9 billion, all Joe Keegan.
That's funny.
That would be fun. Okay, so final thoughts. Justin, why do you go first?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think we had thought we would talk about season 6 and 7, but there was more than enough interesting stuff in 3 episodes of season 6, plus all the Babel Conference feedback. They've talked about it for nearly an hour. Yeah, I think it's interesting to think about these questions and things. I think especially when you think about the origin of life or cloning, I think we got into quite a comprehensive discussion about cloning. I mean, these are things that, I mean, first of all, the origin of life kind of fascinates us. Like, how do we get here? Did it come from somewhere else or what happened? So I think talking about that and the chase is really fascinating. But talking about cloning is like what happens in Second Chances is really interesting as well. And there's all kinds of ethical considerations. And we're getting, it seems like, closer to the possibility of humans being cloned, which I think would be really something that would open up like a lot of like ethical and practical questions. And I think Star Trek helps us to think about that. So I think it's been a great discussion. I think whenever you bring these to us, Joe, for mm-hmm. Science and TNG, it helps us to really think about some important issues through the lens of Star Trek and also to learn about science. Like also the shielding stuff, like I hadn't heard about some of that shielding technology that you were talking about. That's pretty cool and interesting. And maybe in a couple hundred years, it could lead to what we see in Star Trek. So I love these because we learn a lot and we have great discussions. So thank you for that.
No worries. Amy?
You know, I was putting together my classroom and, of course, setting up my Star Trek corner, which I absolutely love. And I had Star Trek music playing while I was doing it. I hang up a poster every year of Albert Einstein, which has his quote, "Imagination is more important than knowledge, for knowledge is limited, whereas imagination embraces the entire world." And, you know, talking about these science episodes and going over what could be into what may be, like, is so exciting. And I just love that Star Trek brings the imagination to us and to help someone like me who's very tactile, very not imaginative, helps me to, you know, see the world and see the possibilities, which I think is a great attribute of Star Trek. I love talking about like these origins of life and the shielding technology and the possibility of cloning. Like those are things that we can do. And then to have the discussion of should we do them, I think is very interesting. And I love these science in TNG episodes because of that. So thank you.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things about Star Trek and sci-fi in general is that the authors will imagine the future and create all the cool technology we see. And then some real life inventor will be inspired by that and create something similar to that technology that they see in Star Trek, like the flip communicator in the original series. And then Motorola invented the flip phone. And then either in 2001, A Space Odyssey, or in Star Trek The Next Generation, we had tablet devices. And then a few years later, Apple invents the iPad. So yeah, science fiction has always been really good at informing how we create our future. And I don't know how many times at STLV and like as a Star Trek fan, we've heard about people being inspired to go on and have careers in STEM purely through watching Star Trek and seeing their heroes on screen. I really enjoy doing these science episodes because it allows you to kind of delve into the episodes that we highlight and how does our current understanding of science kind of explain that. Mm-hmm. So thanks, guys, for talking about the science in TNG part 3 with me today.
And we'll have a part 4.
We'll have a part 4, yeah.
We have to have a part 4, then I think we're going to have a part 5. Yes. Well, it's been so much fun talking about more science in TNG, but that isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on the network. Here is what you might have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Ready Room.
But Larry, how do you know that there's not a house somewhere out there on the Forge where Cybok's in the living room, Michael's in the living room, and there are like 6 other people in the living room that Amanda and Sarek and Spock never talk about?
They took us in for a while and they threw us in the house on the Forge.
The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
Wait, so what switched between your two lists?
Calypso comes in, Runaway comes in second importance.
Right. Okay.
But Calypso comes in second in enhancement of the season.
Okay, I see.
And really, even
there.
In importance, I could probably, in my head, flip Calypso and Runaway because I don't need Runaway.
Standard Orbit.
Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, is the best named movie of the first 6 movies, I think. Because from a marketing point of view, from a Star Trek point of view, it's just a great title. You know, not talking about the execution of the film, I just mean it's a great title. The other movie titles were, you know, I mean, they weren't that creative.
Literary Treks.
So I think if you have an idea or a story for a Star Trek novel, you would be better served if that came on the heels of the 10 pieces of fan fiction that you've written or whatever, or things that you've written on your own that, not necessarily fan fiction, but if you practiced as a writer and have honed your craft, because they're going to want you to be a good writer.
Yeah, they're going to, and that comes back to, you know, it's, they're going to tie in editors, and this is not just Star Trek, this is anybody. They're going to go with people who have demonstrated an ability to hit their marks clean, easy to work with, or at least able to work with, and can do that on a, you know, it's like, okay, I did it once. No, okay, well, now do it again. Now do it 3 times in a row. Now do it 5 times in this one calendar year.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all of these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and written review. That helps others to find the show, and your name will be entered into our drawing.
All right, so you guys ready for a bonus question?
Hashtag still listening.
Yeah. Joe really looks for it. Yep. So here's the question. We talked, I think, a lot about the origin of life, a lot about cloning. We talked somewhat about shielding. Let's talk more about shielding. Like, if you could have your own personal shield that would shield you from the weather outside and potentially shield you from other people you wouldn't want to see while you're out and about, would you do it? Joe?
Weather? Yes. Yeah, no, definitely for the weather, because it rains a lot in Scotland, so that'd be super useful. And also, if it's shielding you from weather, assuming it's some kind of electromagnetic force field, then it could shield you from harmful UVA radiation from the sun.
Oh, so it would be like your sunscreen.
Yeah.
Yes, although in Scotland, there's a higher instance of MS, which is something to do with vitamin D levels in your body. And your skin synthesizes vitamin D by taking in UV.
Yeah.
So we need more sun in Scotland. So I'd have to kind of judge the levels.
Oh, well, maybe the shielding could let in the vitamin D producing stuff enough. Well,
idea.
But it's UV that does that. So
in terms of avoiding people, I don't really...
That's more of a cloaking device, right?
No, I was going to say, you'd have like your personal shield so people couldn't go like up to a certain level. You could keep some of your personal space.
Oh, I don't have that. Yeah, I don't have that kind of thing. Like, my personal space is like there. I mean, people can come
on your
right
face,
up close to me. I don't mind.
Yeah, STLV, my shields are down because I'm hugging on everyone.
Okay. But if you could have like a personal shield for, let's say, even the weather.
I definitely need that, especially living in Las Vegas.
You could have an air-conditioned bubble around you.
That's I'm going opposite because of the AC that is everywhere prevalent in Las Vegas because it's so hot outside.
Oh, so you...
I would have my shields up with warmer temperature. Then I wouldn't have to carry around a sweatshirt and a blanket when I go to STLV. Now that I would definitely get into.
So it would warm you up inside the hotel for STLV, but as soon as you step outside, it would give you some AC maybe. This is cool. I like this idea, especially for weather. We'll have to see because the energy requirements seem like they'd be pretty
huge.
High, but who knows?
And would you use it, Justin?
Oh, yeah. Like if I could go outside and not have to use an umbrella or like get wet in the rain, that would be really cool.
Much more freeing.
I would like that.
Because you're always holding an umbrella. Yeah, that's, one hand down and
I actually haven't used an umbrella in a long time. It's weird. I've noticed this living in different places. Some places people use umbrellas a lot. Other places they don't. They just have like...
They just run real fast and suffer through it, yeah.
You know, in Japan, they are kind of known for having weird and wacky, crazy inventions. I've not made this up. I'm sure somebody invented like an umbrella that wasn't an umbrella. It was just a long stick with some kind of hairdryer-like... thing at the top of it, and it shot jets of air kind of horizontally outwards, kind of radially outwards.
Okay.
And as the raindrops like fell and hit the air, they got deflected around you. Raindrops never touched you.
So it is like a shield. Joe, you're gonna have to find that to let us know if it's true
I'm gonna have to go and write a Wikipedia article on it. See, I didn't make it up.
That's cool. Yeah. Cool. All right, so maybe our personal shields, maybe someone listening to this very podcast is inspired by Star Trek and they're an inventor and they will invent the personal shield.
Please do.
I like that idea because we see it in the animated series where they have that personal shield, you know?
Yeah. Oh, the life belt.
And it shields their whole body just really tight.
Mm-hmm. I like the idea of the David Lynch's Dune, the personal force fields they had. And it was the slow blade penetrates this shield. So anything that was going fast just got deflected off it. But if it was going slow, it would get through.
Oh.
So you just throw your weapon really slowly.
Exactly. Yes.
All right. So if you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, Windows Phone, and most third-party apps. And you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show. And there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook and it should come right up.
If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select Earl Grey. That will come right to us, and we might read your email on the show. You can also find the network on Twitter at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM.
So, Amy, where can people contact you when you don't have your personal shields up to warm yourself at STLV?
Well, you can find me right here on the network co-hosting The Edge with Patrick Devlin, where we talk about Star Trek Discovery. You can find me on Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson, and you can find me right there in the Babel Conference. So, Joe, where can people contact you when you're not cloning yourself to take over the world?
Well, since I'm Joe Alpha, and the rest of my clones are out doing my
bidding,
vile deeds around the world, then you can find me on StarTrek.com and their STLV video roundup.
Listeners,
you can find me. I think I'm on TrekCore. I think they highlighted me.
I think Joe's head has just expanded outside
Jane
of the video
Brooks
frame.
Jane Brooks posted a Twitter with you.
She did, in our montage. Yeah, that's right. What else? The list goes on and on and on. In addition to those things that make me super famous, you can find me on the Babel Conference. You can get me on Twitter at JoeyJoe77UK, or you can email me, joepodcasts@gmail.com. And Justin, where can people contact you when you're not using your personal shields to avoid people?
Well, I just want to say first, we're just having good fun about you being this famous podcaster. We know your head isn't that
because
big.
Because we all know it's me.
Oh, I have no ego whatsoever.
No.
Yeah,
no,
you've got this super
the
ego.
Famous
yeah.
podcaster.
No, we didn't say that. Amy's more famous than all of us because you know they have Star Trek Las Vegas there because of Amy.
You all
right?
come to visit me. That's all I'm saying.
Right, right. Well, let's see. Using my personal shields to avoid people. I wouldn't want to do that at STLV, but there are some circumstances out in the world where that might be useful. Well, you can find me elsewhere on the network co-hosting The Line, our new Star Trek Picard podcast with my friends Chrissy Zalagi and Brandon Shea Matala. We've started talking about TNG stuff, of course, because it leads up into Picard, but once that show starts airing in 2020, we will be talking about each episode as it airs. And you can also find me on Twitter. I'm at TrekFan4747, where I tweet about nothing but Star Trek. By the way, I didn't mention it, but a little while ago, I finished my TNG rewatch.
Yay!
It only took like 2 years and 2 months, but...
Well, sad.
Finally finished it. Yeah. I know, it was fun tweeting about it. And actually, since I'm doing things in order now, so I was doing like TNG seasons 1 to 6, and then in the middle of season 6 when DS9 starts, I was alternating with DS9. Now that that's done, I'm continuing my DS9 rewatch with the first part of season 3, which was the only time that DS9 was on when it was on by itself. And then I'm going to go into Voyager, so getting there.
That's cool.
In the meantime, I'm watching lots of Borg episodes, though. So you can also find me hanging around the Babel Conference on Facebook.
If you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/TrekFM, that's patreon.com/TrekFM, to get out all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits and more, available through our special patrons website, PatronZone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details on patreon.com/TrekFM.
We'd also like to take this opportunity to recognize our current associate producers, Norman Lau, Michael Huter, Thomas Appel, Chris Trabuzio, Joe Keegan, Jim McMahon, and me, Justin Ozer. Thank you for supporting Trek FM, and especially Earl Grey.
So join us next time for another cup of Earl Grey.
Great joy and gratitude.
Shields up! Red alert!
Resistance is futile. Welcome to the Collective of Joe.